Chapter 8. Despite the gloomy prediction, Gazelle found herself toting the metal grate centre opposite Sal under a relentless sun, one that enveloped them in a smothering blanket of muggy heat as they slogged along through the middle of an overgrown field of wild grasses, swatting away bugs more doggedly determined to vex them than the blistering Kansas afternoon itself.
"Hey, at least we didn't have to swap out vehicles," Sal said. "It's nice knowing they're not onto us."
"Yet," Gazelle said. "They're not onto us yet. And that's taking the word of your old chum Picasso, who just told you there aren't any nationwide alerts out for us. That doesn't mean they're not looking. It just means they're not looking as hard as they could be. We're still ditching this thing once we find the chest or wherever it is. Speaking of which, there's no way that that's the same tree." Sal glanced over at the huge oak that stood alone in the middle of the unused field. Hanging Hill had been levelled for an intersection, but with a quick bit of research they'd found out exactly where it had been and used the map from there. In fact, they could still readily see that fortunately quite rural intersection. The trek inscribed in Brethren's belt buckle had ended up taking them only a couple of hundred feet from it, that is, presuming indeed they'd reached their destination. And of course, that was assuming they were looking at the original tree, which Sal had just reminded her would be like 200 years old. The big oak, or whatever was left of it, might have been 100, but 2 seemed like a real long shot.
"You're saying we're wasting our time in the wrong place," Gazelle said,
stopping and forcing Sal to a jolting halt too, as the scanner rack swayed between them.
"Then maybe you figure out where we should be looking. We've been out here for hours, and I'm one big welt of bug bites from head to toe. My feet are killing me, and I'll need to swim in chlorine to stop itching."
"Look, it's an oak," Sal said, "which means it came from another oak. Maybe the oak, because that one has got to be at least 100. Look, most of it's dead already, except that piece way up high. So maybe it's Son of Treasure Oak, which means that we're looking in the right place. We just haven't looked long enough."
"I can't look much longer," Gazelle said,
ignoring Sal's gentle tugs intended to get them moving again and staying put.
"The phone's back at the car. I'm going to take a break and I'll be on it again in a while, when my feet stop throbbing." "I can't work this thing alone," Sal said.
"Then don't," Gazelle said.
"Come back to the car with me and we'll both take the load off."
He saw her let go of her side of the scanning rack and turn around, but he didn't move. She glanced back after about 30 feet.
"You're really staying?" she said.
If only to defy her, yes, he was. She didn't stomp away, but it somehow seemed like it anyway. Sal watched her strut with renewed vigour now that her destination promised a respite from the swelter and pestering insects. Switching off the scanner, he left the rig and headed over to the tree. The map suggested at least 30 feet separated the treasure from the tree, but that was the original oak. If, indeed, this was a descendant of that one whose crude likeness was inscribed on the back of Teak Brethren's belt buckle, then the treasure could be right next to it. As it turned out, the promised chest was even closer than that. Sal had been around the 4-foot diameter bowl 3 times, but he'd been studying the ground, trying to figure out how far it could have grown from the parent tree, and not really looking at the oak itself. Wiping sweat turned to mud by dust and pollen from his face with a wad of drive-through napkins, he leaned over absently and put a hand against the trunk to brace himself. Something sharp jabbed into the middle of his palm, causing him to recoil and look down. First at his undamaged skin, then over at the tree. What looked like a little 3-sided wooden pyramid jutted out perhaps 1.5 inches from the otherwise flat surface of the trunk. This wasn't covered in bark like all around it, but instead had uneven coloration and surprisingly straight edges between the 3 faces of the protrusion. As it slowly dawned on Sal what he was seeing, he felt his heart kick up its already work and heat-induced high pace. He felt like he couldn't breathe. Was he dizzy? There was no doubt about it. The thing that had jabbed him in the hand wasn't part of the oak's great tree trunk. Between his own shock and disbelief and the logistics involved, he didn't get Gazelle over to see it until maybe 30 minutes later. But when she finally did get a close look at that pointed protrusion, her cynicism and annoyance faded in seconds. She turned to look at Sal.
her jaw hanging loose as his had been when he'd realised what had happened.
It grew into the tree.
That it had. Without a doubt, the corner of an old wooden chest jutted out of the side of a nearly century-old oak tree that had grown up to swallow the container that, they could only assume, had been buried right where it had come up.
I don't get it, though, Gazelle said. If it was 6 feet deep, what?
Did the roots pull it up from all the way down?
Sal shook his head.
Who cares as long as the gold's in there? He finally said. Of course, now we've got to get some power tools to get it out.
Done, Gazelle said immediately. Stay here and keep an eye on our treasure. I'll be back as fast as I can fly.
Sal didn't get much of a chance to protest, as usual, really. Before he even had time to get out a word, she'd spun back about and was racing off toward the car with the bouncy vigour she'd claimed to have already exhausted. The afternoon ground by for Sal as he waited for Gazelle to get back with the tools. Sitting with his back at the base of the oak, he thought about those calls. Sal didn't believe in ghosts, but he couldn't explain how unconnected old phones were talking to them.
Wait. Them.
Teak Brethren had been as insulting and dismissive to Sal as Henry Sapridge. He was calling Gazelle. And he wanted most of the loot to go to some executive in a Texas skyscraper. Sal didn't like that either. But he wasn't in management. Apparently he was just a foot soldier. And maybe, he realised, that's what he'd been all along. Even before this extreme weirdness had made it so clear. But a foot soldier serving which commander? Gazelle, no doubt. But she served Sapridge and now Brethren. Although mainly she served herself. And Sal, old good-luck Sal Manx, well, he was a lackey to them all. He craned and twisted his neck to glance up at the protruding chest corner, which was only a few inches over his head. Sal hoped Gazelle would bring a hammer and chisel, not a powerful reciprocating drill, but knowing her she'd want in as expeditiously as possible. He had that right. A chainsaw. That's what she came looking across the field when she finally showed up a couple of hours after she'd left. All fueled up and ready to go, Gazelle said.
Let's cut that bitch out of there and get our just rewards.
She hadn't brought anything else. Sal mentioned that.
What do we need besides?
She said, hefting the chainsaw at her side.
Chop, 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 chop. One over, one under.
One cut on each side and it falls right out.
I guess.
She handed it to him, her hands still cool and dry from riding around in air conditioning turned up full blast.
This is really how you want to do this, Sal said. You know, I could end up bringing it down right on top of us.
Then don't, Gazelle said.
Tell you what.
I'll get way clear just in case.
Gee, thanks.
Well, you're going to want somebody to pull you out from under it, right?
You just pull the box out and take off.
Gazelle looked deeply offended.
If you really think that, then let's just get this over with and go our different ways. I'll take 90% of my half to this Cadence guy, and you go off with the other half and good luck figuring out how to wipe your nose without me.
Her fire intimidated his. He fired up the chainsaw and revved it, glaring at her.
Ooh, I want to get a pick of that, Gazelle said. You look all Texas massacre crazy.
Sal felt crazy. Crazy enough to thrust the whizzing chainsaw blade into the tree trunk about a foot to the right of the embedded treasure chest.
That's my boy, Gazelle said to herself,
backing up and watching him widen the slot he'd made into a groove a couple of feet long. In a low voice she added,
for now, anyway.
Sal was at it for a while, working to do what she'd made sound so fast and easy. The sun kept sinking, but the humidity kept getting worse. He was drenched in a soup of condensation and perspiration. Success taunted and teased, seeming right at hand. Yet, even when he'd managed to widen all four slots to the point where they appeared to connect on the surface, the block within the slots wouldn't budge.
Why isn't it moving? Gazelle said. You've got it cut out.
I must not have connected the cut's edge to edge all the way through the tree yet, Sal said.
Well, hurry up and finish before the mosquitoes actually drain enough blood to render us comatose.
I'm hungry, Sal said.
He'd shut off the chainsaw and was standing next to his workmanship and staring at her. Why don't you go get us some food?
I ate while I was out getting the saw, Gazelle said.
Thanks for bringing me some, Sal said.
Mind getting me some now?
Shit, Gazelle said with a toss of her shoulders.
Fine, I guess, but you stay here and get it done while I'm gone.
Sure. Work alone. Why not? That way nobody has to be annoyed by my death scream when the tree falls on me.
You haven't even made it teeter up there yet, Gazelle said,
her focus flashing momentarily up the 80-foot high peak of the old oak before coming back down to meet Sal's.
There can't be much left to go. You ought to have it out by the time I get back.
3 hours, maybe.
I won't be gone 3 hours.
Sal just shrugged and kept staring. So Gazelle huffed, turned and headed off for the car. He watched her all the way there, and as she got in and pulled back onto the unlined rural road, he found himself alone with his work again. Maybe it would fall over on him. Maybe he should make it do so. Maybe he deserved it. He was probably killing the tree anyway, although its own age had already done a lot of the work. He'd cut off the bark's vital fluid flow over about a third or so of its remaining surface, and they'd be leaving a hole in the side big enough for a laundry basket that would be exposing the trunk's core to the elements in perpetuity. He was sorely tempted to finish the job in several ways at once. Perhaps it was just coincidence that a breeze finally kicked up to push some of the suffocating swelter around, even as he pondered the dark thought. But Sal looked up and saw the oak leaves some 50 feet up. The last fully living branches, relatively thick cloud of them, rustling and bending that live branch against the rest. The gusting wind bent the tree even farther in the next couple of moments. A great cracking of wood sent Sal reflexively backpedaling. But he didn't go far. The sound had come from the thick bole, no doubt. Another gust a few seconds later made a lesser but still intimidating detonation of splintering wood. Sal had a great feel for materials, even wood. The tree was going to topple if the newly risen wind kept buffeting it. More than likely, he knew, there had already been cracks in the ancient wood beneath the rough grey-black bark, and the cuts he'd just made were putting who knew how much extra stress on the failing points. Another gust, more snapping and popping. Sal decided he could wait it out. Moving back to about 50 feet away on the upwind side, he flattened out a circle of grass wide enough to sit in, and proceeded to watch the oak ripple and creak in the final moments of what loomed large as its last upright day. Gazelle was gone for about an hour and a half, longer than necessary, but not egregiously so. She returned to the site of the great oak, snapped off about 6 feet above the ground, its bulk splintered and strewn across the prairie grass like a titanic fragmentation grenade. Sal was nowhere in sight. Gazelle raced across the field as wind buffeted the grass in dizzying waves before her. She didn't find him at first, but as she approached the trunk she could see that the break had occurred not at the spot where Sal had been cutting, but a yard or so above it. Nevertheless, the splitting and splintering had extended downward from the jagged break line here and there, and as a result the block containing the chest had come free.
Gazelle?
She looked around for Sal. That had been his voice, though weak and faint and all but lost in the wind. Had she actually even heard that or just imagined it? The block with the chest inside it was nowhere in sight. Neither was Sal. But the voice had come from nearby. That is, if she'd actually heard it.
Sal?
Over here.
The live branch at the top of the tree must have snapped off and been flung back the wrong way, into the wind, as the rest of the massive hulk had been pushed over. The leaves were shrouding Sal within them. Gazelle heard him rustling there, and set about bending back and breaking small branches to find him. Not only was he pinned under a heavy limb about 4 inches in diameter and 20 feet long, another broken-off branch had impaled him clear through his left side just above the belt.
Oh shit, Gazelle said. I don't think I can get you out.
Chainsaw.
Gazelle looked around.
Where is it?
She said. She rose up and parted more leafy limbs, searching for the chainsaw. But she saw the chest first.
You got it,
she said softly to herself. Without another word, she grabbed for it, intending to jerk it free from the thick section of the trunk that still enveloped it on three sides. But despite how it looked, It was still firmly attached to the obviously quite heavy mass of wood that had grown up around it. She went back to looking for the chainsaw. Gazelle could hear Sal moaning, asking if she was there. She replied that she was and wanted to know where the chainsaw was, and he managed to tell her that he'd left it out where he'd been sitting. She didn't listen to what else he was trying to say. She just took off looking for the chainsaw. Dusk was upon them, and she needed to find it and get the treasure. That is to say, get them out before they required lights to see. Lights that would give them away to a nosy passerby. She found the chainsaw after some kicking around and lots of cursing and raced back. She was not good at firing one up, and as much as her adrenaline was rushing, she had to force herself to listen to Sal explain the right way to do it. By then she'd flooded it, and had to wait to even try his right way, flustering her again. She kept eyeing that embedded chest until Sal finally had his eyes open long enough to notice it.
"The chunk. It just fell out," he said. "Tray was still up. I figured I'd just grab and get clear. But the chest is still stuck. And the piece is so heavy. I was dragging it clear. Big gust. Heard cracking, then..."
"You'll be all right," Gazelle said. "I gotta cut you loose. Hang on."
She had been kneeling down beside where he lay, wedged in between the tree limbs. She got to her feet and pulled the chainsaw cord. Once. Twice.
"Hey, looks like Sap got this one right."
Gazelle spun around. Two figures were standing there some 20 feet away, silhouetted against the last light of the sun.
Who are you?" she said. "What's it look like?"
The one on the right said in the same dark feminine voice that had uttered the first words.
"We're treasure hunters."